Hi, Mom.
Hey, Daph. What's up?
Not a whole lot. What's up with you?
Nothing. Just got home from work. It was freezing fucking cold today.
Yeah, it's snowing.
Yeah, again.
Yeah, I thought it was spring.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, not really. Not really spring. Not really springling dingling.
It is not. And our spring is our
fucking beaver lied.
It's a, I was going to say a warthog. It's a
fucking groundhog. Oh.
It's not a beaver or a warthog. It's a groundhog.
The beaver lied.
He's only 39% accurate, according to statistics.
Well, and he lied.
And Colorado's...
And he's not even a beaver, so I lied.
Or a warthog.
And none of those things.
Colorado, the snowiest months are the spring months. But it's still February. Technically not spring. But that being said, not only is it snowing, it is cold as fuck today.
That being said, I just totally put my head down in sadness and disbelief.
That it's February?
That it's snowing.
Oh, sorry.
And cold.
I keep thinking it's January when it snows. I'm like, well, it's only January. And I'm like, oh, wait, it's February.
I know. And it's like halfway through the month. Yeah. Like more than halfway.
Yeah.
That how that happens, I don't know.
I'm doing math.
I guess it is. We're trying to figure it out. All right, Mom, what's your disturbing fact?
Oh, my God. You are going to just be so grossed out by this.
Oh, God. You're giving me a gross one?
Yeah. Not only is it disturbing, but it's vilely disgusting.
Oh, God. All right. Let me have it.
Sorry. This throat thing happening again.
Always. Beaver?
I don't know. Yeah, I have a beaver in my throat.
There's a beaver in my throat. Get it out.
Okay. So are you familiar with the band, the Ramones?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I'm like, actually, please tell me that you are. Well, you had a look on your face, and I'm like, oh my God.
Well, no, it just took me a second to figure out. But yes, I do know who the Ramones are.
Okay.
Yes, I do. Yes, I know some of their songs. I mean, like, I don't specifically, like, know them. It's not like we're on, like, speaking terms and, like, I text them all the time. But,
you know of them?
I know of them.
Okay, this is a direct quote from the book called Please Kill Me, The Uncensored Oral History of Punk by Legs.
Oral history?
Oral history. That means verbal or something else.
That's what I'm like, oof.
By Legs McNeil. And this is so Legs? Gross. His name is Legs. We're not judging. His okay. name is Legs.
I thought we were, but all right. I thought we judged here, but fuck, all right.
No, we do. You're right. So he either has really long legs or he has no legs.
Not daddy long legs.
Well, it's not daddy legs. It's just legs. So it's either
long legs or short legs or no. What if he's got no legs?
That's what I said.
No legs?
I said he either has long legs or no legs.
Do you ever fucking listen to me?
You just skipped over short. Well, if it's like ironic, like how 400-pound people are called tiny. He's called Legs.
He or like have Big any. T on the challenge, who's tiny.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I know. It makes me uncomfortable that they call her Big T and she's like itty bitty.
Yes. All right. All right. So are all you right. ready for this direct
yes.
quote?
Yes. All right. Oh, no.
You're just trying to make a lot of fucking editing work for me, aren't you?
Oh, no. I would never.
Okay. Are you ready for my disturbing fact?
I'm ready.
So this is a direct quote from Dee Dee Ramone of the Ramones. He said, Sid Vicious followed me all over the place. The worst time was one night. Sorry, there's a reflection on my phone. Oh, there we go. Okay. I'm like,
I have to tell. Oh my gosh. Okay.
The worst time was one night when we had a big party. They were serving beer and wine and everybody was bombed. The whole bathroom was filled with puke in the sink, in the toilets, on the floor. It was really disgusting. All of a sudden, I had a huge amount of speed in my hand and I started sniffing it like crazy. I was so high. And then I saw Sid and he said, do you have anything to get high? And I said, yeah, I got some speed. So Sid pulled out a set of works and put a whole bunch of speed in the syringe and then stuck the needle in the toilet with all the puke and piss in there and loaded it. And he didn't cook it up. He just shook it, stuck it in his arm and got off. I just looked at him. I'd seen it all by then. He just looked at me kind of dazed and said, man, where did you get this stuff?
Okay, that's fucking disgusting.
Is that disgusting?
But you did a whole fucking thing on Sid Vicious. So his nastiness does not come as a surprise to me, but that's fucking like whole next level, just gross nastiness.
Yeah, that's next level.
Yeah, that's like horrible. Yeah. Ew.
Could you imagine? I mean, I can't imagine shooting drugs one way or the other, but to stick it in a toilet that's got puke and see, piss
I
in
typically
it.
Shoot up my ibuprofen. That was a joke.
To stick it in a toilet with puke and piss and then inject it into your fucking vein.
Yeah, that's nasty.
Yeah, that's fucking vile.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
I don't even know why you would bring that here.
Because I heard it on something else. And so then I looked it up and was like, oh, shit.
You're like, ew. You're like, need to discuss this.
Yeah, someone else had to know about it besides me.
Yeah, well, thanks for that.
And the people who've read Legs's book.
Well, thanks. Legs is. Well, thanks. Now I have to know that. And I have to have that visual in my head for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I just like I said, I'm like, this is so fucking disturbing. This is a disturbing fact. It's a fact and it's disturbing.
It's a fact and it's disturbing.
And it's disgusting.
It's nasty. It's vile. Oh, God. Here we go. It's vile. Here we go.
It's vile. Okay, Daph, I'm ready for you to get back into this because this is so fucking.
Yeah. So today's part two of Martin Bryant.
Sorry, I had to enunciate.
I had to. Probably, maybe. Okay.
Definitely.
So I'm going to give you a quick little recap. This is part two, by the way. We're going to have to make this a three-parter, which my apologies, but this shit's crazy. This one's going to be like really sensitive and heavy. Trigger warning for mass murder.
And also, if you didn't listen to part one, you should go back and listen to part one.
I agree, because part one's pretty crazy.
Part one's super crazy. And not so sad. It's a little sad, some sadness, but it's just fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's fucking insane.
Yeah, let me just say ponies and cars.
Ponies and cars, yes. And you look in the mirror and you see clown makeup.
Crap.
Okay, so here's just a little skinny on what happened last time. What happened last time, his upbringing. So he had a personality disorder, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly what was up with him. It's been theorized that it was either schizophrenia, possibly bipolar, multiple personality disorder, something along those lines, right?
Okay.
A large personality disorder. Not
a
like
a large personality disorder, not just a small one like being a jackass.
Yeah, not just a small one like being a douchebag. So he made friends with an heiress, and for all intents and purposes for our podcast, he allegedly murdered her, right? According to people that knew him and that knew her, that said that he would often grab the steering wheel from her while she was driving, and then she died. So yeah. There's that.
That was an accident.
And then his dad, who was his caretaker, committed suicide.
Yeah, that was sad.
And then he inherited a lot of money and was traveling a lot.
Yes, that's where we were.
So that's where we left off.
And the saddest thing you said was that he liked the flights more than anything because people had to sit there and talk to him.
Yeah.
That's fucking sad.
That is really sad.
Yeah.
It's really horrible.
Yeah.
So I didn't give you this bit of information last time because it didn't really pertain to anything you would care about last time.
Okay.
But you're going to care about it today.
Okay.
So Martin's father, Maurice, when he was alive, he tried to purchase a bed and breakfast called the Seascape Cottage. But Nolene, who was also known as Sally, like Nolene or Sally is her name.
Yeah, I see how you make that connection.
And David Martin.
Sally is short for Nolene.
I don't know how they came up with it, but okay. I just wanted to say that. So Nolene and David, they're a couple, the Martins. Not to be confused with Martin, who's our guy, but the Martins. They bought this property before his father could buy it, before like Maurice like had his ducks in a row with his finances to be able to purchase it.
Mm.
But Maurice like really complained about it all the time while he was alive and said that like he thought that they were double dealing and the Martins had like, you know, done some shady shit to secure the purchase of the property.
Mm-hmm.
Maurice also offered to buy another property from the Martins. Which was at Palmer's Lookout Road, but they declined the offer.
Why?
I don't know why.
Okay.
I don't know why they declined it. But Martin believed that the Martins had deliberately bought the property to hurt his family.
Okay.
And that it led to that, that was like what led to the depression for his dad's 1993 suicide.
Okay.
So he thought that that was, you know, what was all happening. And then he later said about the Martins, he described them as very mean people and as the worst sick people he's ever met in his life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe they were.
Maybe, but.
Maybe they did do it on purpose.
Maybe. I don't know.
We don't know.
So, and okay, remember, he likes guns.
Mm-hmm.
And again, obviously, everything we talk about is triggering, but I want to put it back out there. This is like a huge trigger warning, okay?
Uh-huh.
For mass murder and mass shooting.
Okay.
And stuff like that. Not in stuff like that. Like, that's what happens. So.
Stuff like that. So that.
So aside from traveling, which we talked about that he liked doing with like his newfound wealth from inheriting all this money from all of his dead people in his life that were like his favorite people.
Yeah. But his dad put the money in a trust so he couldn't get it all at once.
Yes. He was getting like stipends of it. And same with the.
The money from
the Tattersalls. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. From the gambling empire.
Mm, I love that. So, I want a gambling empire.
I do too.
People gamble a lot.
I want to start a gambling cult. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, yeah. That's a great idea.
So where we left off was in 1995, right? But in 1993, he bought an AR-10 semi-automatic rifle through a newspaper ad. And then at some point, he also attempted to find an AR-15 rifle. And then he couldn't. But at some point, he was able to actually legally purchase an AR-15 along with an L1A1 self-loading rifle, which is a battle rifle, and a USAS 12 automatic shotgun.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So he's accumulating guns now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at some point also leading up to everything, he purchased a large sports bag, which he used to load all of his ammo into.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I guess, like really put a lot of thought into this bag. Like he went and like measured every single bag that was available to make sure it would fit all of his ammo. So he like really put a lot of thought into this bag that was going to be carrying.
I'm thinking of like a hockey player's bag or something because yes, it's fucking huge.
Similar to that. Yeah. I believe it's similar to that anyway. There's no pictures, but.
Okay.
In 1995, he was also very suicidal and said that this is a quote. "I just felt like more people were against me. When I tried to be friendly toward them, they just walked away."
That's sad.
Yeah, it is really sad. And then when he was 27, he had a girlfriend.
Well, that's good.
She Maybe. Was 16-year-old, Mary.
Oh, yeah, that's not good. Never mind, I take that back.
And they dated for 8 months, and he took her traveling a lot. And
where are her parents?
I don't know. I have no idea. After everything that's going to unfold that we're going to discuss and talk about, she did an interview. I think this must be like a newspaper or like some kind of news thing, but it's called Sunday Night.
Okay.
And she told them that she was initially interested in Bryant for what he had to offer as a person, but she wasn't attracted to his $500,000 inheritance, which he had acquired through one of his adult friends.
Gotcha.
So that's what she had to say about it.
She said she didn't care about the money. She just liked him.
She said she liked him. Yeah. But she also said that she didn't think he was smart and he was always trying to impress her. And he reportedly was very smitten when he met Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they obviously had an 11-year age difference and she is a minor, even though I don't really know if that's being a minor in Australia.
It's still a minor.
It's still, yeah, yucky.
I don't know if it's a minor in Australia. It is.
Well, we don't actually know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what the laws look like.
Okay.
It's a minor in the United States, and therefore it's yucky.
and even if it's not a minor, it's yucky.
Even if it's not a minor, what do you mean? Even if it's not a minor, it's yucky.
Even if she's not legally considered a minor, it's yucky.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
Because she's 16 and he's 27. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yucky.
He asked her to marry him.
Okay.
And then in an interview with the Herald Sun, she said that he was obsessed with teddy bears, dolls, violent videos, and described him as strange, but very, very nice. And then this is another quote from her. She said he had long blonde hair, blue eyes. He had huge muscles and was rich. I did like him a lot. And then she also said that he shaved his chest to look more like a woman. And he brought back videos from Scandinavia, which featured bizarre animal sex acts and bestiality. He also had more than 200 teddy bears and dolls that were scattered throughout the Clare Street house. And she thought he was really cute, but could be so childish. And she said that his favorite film was Child's Play 2, which we know is Chucky.
Yes.
And he used to go on about it all the time. And then, you know, we know that Chucky, like, comes to life. Obviously, it's a doll that comes to life and kills.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, duh.
Well, we know that. There was a phrase out of that movie that he used to say, which was, don't fuck with the Chuck.
I like it.
I like it too, but I don't like that he said it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a very fucking odd combination, all the things you just said.
Yeah, I'm just reading. Okay, hang on. I have one more thing.
Like, there's more.
So he used to get excited when he'd say that and he'd think he was really cool. That's what she had to say about it. When he said, don't fuck with Chuck.
Okay.
Or don't fuck with the Chuck.
Don't fuck with the Chuck. I'm going to have to start saying that.
Yeah, me too. Don't fuck with the Chuck. Well, I already say chuck it in the fuck it bucket.
Don't fuck with the Chuck.
don't chuck with the fuck. Don't chuck with the fuck, y'all.
No.
That's what I was talking about when I said I knew you were going to ask me about the girlfriend stuff.
Okay.
That's why I had to include all of that.
Well, God, I'm glad you did, because that was like
a lot.
Yeah, and it was informational.
Yeah, it's very informative.
Putting together a picture of Martin.
On
plus, I didn't picture him being having long blonde hair and blue eyes. I don't know why I pictured him.
Can I just say, if he wasn't a criminal, or maybe, I don't know. I feel like the Britney Spears song, I'm in love with a criminal mama.
Okay.
Not actually, because after everything you hear and all that. No, he's on the surface, he's actually very attractive. Like, he's very pretty.
Okay.
And I never thought I'd be one of those girls who said that, but here we are.
Okay. Yeah. Excuse me. I didn't picture that. I still don't know what he looks like, but I have a better visual because what I pictured him to look like Lenny in Of Mice and Men.
I think it's Lenny.
Yeah. I think so.
I think Lenny is the one who you're thinking of.
Yeah. So he doesn't look like that.
He does not look like that.
Can you just show me a picture of him?
Yeah, no.
He's not that.
He's not that at all. He's like, I would say, your stereotypical, like, surfer kind of looking guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You need to do a gram.
I will do a gram. I just haven't done one because we've been sucky at the gram. We've been sucky at the socials.
Yeah.
But we will be better.
Okay, anyway, back to your regularly scheduled program.
On April 28th, 1996, 28-year-old Martin Bryant woke up to his alarm at 6 a.m. During interviews following all of the events, his current girlfriend, who was named Petra Wilmot, and we don't really know a lot about her, we just know that she basically became a recluse and said that she didn't love him after everything that's going to unfold.
Okay.
And other family members stated that he never used an alarm clock. Like, that was not a thing that he did.
Huh.
And 2 hours after, his girlfriend, who was spending the night with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
She left to go visit her parents. And after that, he left with all of his weapons in the sports bag full of ammo.
Okay.
And when he left the house, he was driving his yellow 244 GL sedan, yellow Volvo. Did I say that Volvo?
No, I was like, what's a GL?
No, sorry. I skipped right over that. His yellow Volvo 244 GL sedan. He was just like, I guess, driving about in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went and he purchased a cigarette lighter. I don't know why I said cigar.
Either way.
A lighter.
A lighter that lights things.
Yeah. A bottle of tomato sauce.
Okay.
A cup of coffee.
All right.
And $15 worth of gas.
Okay.
And during two of the purchases, he told both the attendants at, like, the convenience stores he went to that he was going out surfing, even though the weather, like, wouldn't have made surfing conditions very good because it was, like, a really calm day.
Okay. And I have a question. Did he get gas for the car or did he, like, fill gas cans?
He filled gas cans.
Okay.
Sorry. I should have said that.
No, yes, that's
he
okay.
filled gas cans. So by 11:45, Martin, he arrived at the property Seascape. Remember? Mm-hmm. I told you about that. The cottage, which I didn't think was relevant last time.
The Martins.
Yes, the Martins.
Mm-hmm.
So he walked inside. He murdered both of them.
Oh, shit.
He killed 72-year-old David and 69-year-old Nolene Martin. And he stabbed David Martin. And then he applied blunt force trauma to Nolene before he shot both of them.
So he stabbed and blunt force trauma before he shot them?
Before he shot.
Okay.
Before he shot.
Okay.
So then after, when he was like leaving. So he took their guns that were like stored at the property and the keys and locked it up. And then when he was leaving, a couple, they stopped outside of the property and they asked if they could have a look inside. It was a bed and breakfast, you know, and he told them that they couldn't because his parents were away and his girlfriend was inside. And then they said that he was like rude and they kind of felt uneasy about it. And he said that then they left at about 12:35. And then after this, he stopped at a car that had been pulled over due to overheating, like after he left and talked with two people that were in the car. He said that they should go to the Port Arthur Cafe for some coffee later. He told them that. And then he traveled past Port Arthur towards, which is a historic site, but we'll dive into that anyway, towards Palmer's Lookout Road, right?
Which was the other property.
Where the other property that his dad wanted to buy was, where he came across Roger Larner, and they had met, I guess, on like a few occasions, whatever. Okay. But I guess it was 15 years ago. So like they knew each other, but not really.
Okay.
So he had told Roger that he'd been out surfing and had a property. He just bought a new property. It was called Fog Lodge. And he was looking to buy some cattle from Roger. And then he also made like several comments about buying the Martin's place next door. And then he asked if, I suck at saying this name, Marianne.
Yes.
Larner was home, which I don't know if this is like his daughter or his wife, but someone of relation.
Yeah.
He asked if she was home, and then he asked if he could like continue to go down the driveway to see her. And Roger was like, sure, but I'll come with you. And then he said, Martin said that he was going to go to Nubina first, which is like a small fishing town. And then he would come return in the afternoon. So like he didn't actually go down there. So
he's around, like, oh, you want to go with me? Just kidding.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
So around 1:10, he paid the entry fee for the Port Arthur historic site. And then he proceeded to park near the Broad Arrow Cafe near the water. This is on like a, it's seaside.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what it's coastal.
Gotcha. The town seaside, that they're seaside, coastal.
Yeah, the town that they're at.
Gotcha.
I mean, obviously it's a port, but you know, it's like right on the water.
Okay.
So the site security manager, he told him to park with the other cars because the area that he tried to park in was reserved for camper vans and that the parking lot was busy that day. And Martin moved his car like to where he was told to move his car. And he sat there for a few minutes and then he moved his car back to where he wanted to move his car, like outside of the cafe.
Okay.
And I guess the security manager like saw him get out of the car carrying like the sports bag and didn't. And he also had a video camera on him, but he just like didn't do anything about it.
Martin had a video camera?
Martin had a video camera.
Okay.
And then he went inside the cafe, the Broad Arrow Cafe, right? And he purchased a meal. He sat outside and he ate on the deck. He attempted to start conversations with people, you know, as he always does, talking about the lack of wasps in the area.
Alrighty.
And how there wasn't as many Asian and Japanese tourists as there normally were.
Okay.
He also, I guess, to people looked nervous and he looked back at like the parking lot a lot and into the cafe a lot, was like just constantly scoping it out, everything around him. So then he ate his lunch. He moved towards the back of the cafe. He set his camera down on a vacant table in the cafe. I don't know if he was recording or not, though. Here's the catch. I don't know if he was recording.
Okay.
But we do know that he just like set his camera down. So the cafe, it was really small. It was a busy day. Lots of tourists in town. Lots of shit happening. Right. Then Martin pulled out his rifle and shot 48-year-old William. I'm so going to butcher this. Ching. I don't know how to say that. It's NG. I don't know how you say that. And 32-year-old Su Lang Chung, who were visiting from Malaysia. He then fired a shot at Mick Sargent, who grazed his scalp, knocked him to the floor. Then he fatally shot Sargent's girlfriend, who was 21-year-old Kate Elizabeth Scott, which then he hit her in the back of the head.
Jeez.
Then he turned to 28-year-old New Zealand winemaker Jason Winter, who had been helping the cafe staff because it was so busy. And then he turned toward Winter's wife, Joanne, and their 15-month-old son, Mitchell. And Jason threw a serving tray at Martin in an attempt to distract him. And Then Joanne Winter's father pushed his daughter and grandson to the floor under the table. Then 44-year-old Anthony Nightingale stood up after, like, the sounds of the shots.
Mm-hmm.
He yelled, "No, not here." And then Martin pulled the weapon, or pointed the weapon at him, pulled the trigger as he leaned forward, and as Anthony Nightingale leaned forward.
Mm-hmm.
And he was shot through the neck and the spine.
Ugh.
Then Martin fired another shot that killed Kevin Vincent Sharp, who was 68. He then fired another shot at Walter Bennett, who was 66, which it passed through his body, and then struck Raymond John Sharp, who was 67, killing everyone. So the three of them had their backs towards Bryant and were unaware of what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the shots were all in close range. And then Gerald Broom, Gay Fiddler, and her husband, John Fiddler, were all struck by bullet fragments, but they survived.
Okay, that's good.
Martin then turned towards Tony and Sarah Kiston and Andrew Mills and Thelma Walker and Pamela Law. And they were injured by fragments before being dragged to the ground by their friend, who was Peter Croswell, as three of them sheltered underneath the table. I'm sorry, this is a lot of names here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to break this down differently for you, like as we continue to move through time of this.
Okay.
I'm going to break it down for you more simply. But anyway, I'm just getting through like the events.
It's a lot.
Of what's taking. Yeah. You just wait for it.
Great.
So then he moved just like a few paces away and started shooting at the table where Graham Collier? Something like that, Collier. Carolyn Lawton and her daughter Sarah were all at this table. Graham was shot in the jaw. Sarah Lawton ran towards her mother, who had been moving between tables. Carolyn, she threw herself on top of her daughter. He shot Carolyn in the back. Her eardrum was ruptured, obviously.
Jeez.
Because it was so fucking loud.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Carolyn tried, her daughter had been shot in the head.
Oh, jeez. I don't like this.
I don't like it either.
Okay.
But I mean, it's a very impactful case, though, which is going to be like what part three is about.
Okay.
So then he pivoted around and he shot Marvin Howard. The bullet passed through him through a window of the cafe and hit a table outside.
Jeez.
He then shot his wife, Mary, in the back and in the head and in the neck. And then when he was near the exit, he was preventing people from escaping. That's why he was near the exit,
mm-hmm.
by at the back, right?
Yeah.
And then he moved towards the gift shop. And as he started moving like towards the gift shop right there, Robert Elliott stood up. He was shot in the arm and in the head, but he survived.
Good.
So
lucky.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Okay. From the first shot that he pointed at William,
mm-hmm.
right? All of these events, all of this took place in 15 seconds.
Are you fucking kidding?
Nope.
High-powered semi-automatic rifle.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
He fired 17 shots, killed 12 people, and wounded 10 more people.
Jeez.
So we're going to go back. We're going to remember the victims of the cafe right now. Okay. And I really tried to do my due diligence and find out as much as I could about these people. There's not a ton out there on a lot of them. So maybe if I could gather more information for part three, I'll bring it back for part three and like talk more about them.
Okay.
But this is what I could find. There was William Cheech, I don't know how you say it, NG, who was 48, and So Leng Chung, who was 32, and they were visiting from Malaysia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kate Scott, who was 21, and she was about to start a new job.
Uh-huh.
Anthony Nightingale, who was 48. Brothers Kevin Sharp, who was 68, and Raymond Sharp, who was 67, and their friend, 66-year-old Walter Bennett, and they called him Wally.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin, he was killed while shielding his wife from being killed.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Mills, who was 49. Tony Kiston, who was 51, he was a Salvation Army officer, and he said he passed away in his wife's arms, and he said to his wife while he was passing away that he was going to be in the arms of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah Jeez. Lawton, who was 15, and her mom tried to protect her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Marvin Howard, who was 55, and his wife Mary, who was 57, and they were active members in their small community in Central Victoria. They were well-respected. They were avid churchgoers. He was the secretary of the Ballarat Football League for 14 years and they had 5 children.
Jeez, that's so horrible.
It's so sad, right?
Yeah, and I hate it when, and I'm sure you're still going, right?
That's the list of the cafe.
Okay, yeah, it's just, you know, when people get murdered like that and how it affects so many other people.
Yeah,
it's like, it's horrible. Not just like those people got killed, but all those people's families and friends and everything got affected. And then, of course, you can't find anything out about him. You know everything about Martin Bryant, even how much he weighed when he was born.
Yep. But these people, the victims.
Yeah.
The people that made him infamous.
Yeah.
Because he's a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all sad. So as Martin, he moved towards the gift shop area, many people like hid under the tables and behind shop displays. So he fatally shot 2 local women who worked at the gift shop. 17-year-old Nicole Burgess, he shot her in the head.
Jeez.
And Elizabeth Howard, who was 26, he shot in the arm and the chest. Then there was Coralie Lever and Vera Jerry. Not Jerry. Jari. I'm sorry. Jari.
Okay.
I literally saw it. I watched like a 2-hour long news vault coverage of this whole thing playing out on Australian news channels. It's pronounced Jari.
Okay.
I'm sorry. But there wasn't all that much information about the victims. They hid behind a burlap screen. Coralie Lever's husband, Dennis, was fatally shot in the head. Pauline Masters and Vera Jari's husband, Ronald, and Peter and Carolyn Nash attempted to escape through a locked door, but they couldn't open it. And then Peter laid down on top of his wife to protect her from the gunman. And Gwen Neander, who was trying to make it to the door, was shot in the head and killed.
Jeez.
Then Martin saw movement from in the cafe. And so he moved like towards the front door and he shot at the table and he hit Peter Croswell, who was hiding under it, mm-hmm. in the butt. And then he hit Jason Winter, who was hiding in the gift shop, but thought that the gunman had left the building and made a comment about it to people near him moving out into the open. Then Martin Bryant saw him. Mm-hmm. And then with Winter screaming, no, no. And then he shot him.
Jeez.
The bullet hit his hand and then his neck and then his chest. And then he was shot in the head after that.
Jeez.
And fragments from those bullets struck American tourist Dennis Olson, who had been hiding with his wife, Mary, and Winter, and Jason Winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dennis Olson, he suffered from injuries to his hand, scalp, eye, and chest, but he survived.
That's good.
So, yeah. It's all freaking crazy and fast. The way this is happening is like in seconds.
Yeah.
So this is where it gets slightly unclear as to what is happening next. So at some point, Martin reloaded his weapon. He walked back to the cafe and then returned to the gift shop where he fatally shot Ronald Jari, Peter Nash, and Pauline Masters. He didn't see Carolyn Nash because her husband, Peter, was shielding her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Martin moved over to the gift shop counter where he reloaded his rifle. And sometime in between this, he attempted to shoot someone else, but his magazine was empty.
Okay.
And this person's unidentified.
Okay. So hopefully they got away, survived.
They did.
Okay.
And then he left the empty magazine on the counter and then he left the building. So between the gift shop and the Broad Arrow Cafe, he fired 29 shots, killed 20 people, and wounded 12 in the space of 90 seconds now.
Jeez. That's fucking crazy. So, a minute and a half
to kill fucking 20 people.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
It's terrible.
So now we're going to go back and remember the victims who we just covered who died, but we didn't cover before. Okay.
Okay.
So there was Nicole Burgess, who was 17, who worked at the gift shop. Elizabeth Howard, who was 26, who also worked at the gift shop. Gwenda or Gwen Neander, who was 67. Jason Winter, who was 28. Remember, he was the winemaker from New Zealand, mm-hmm. who was helping the staff that day.
Yeah.
And it was a father.
Yeah.
And then there's Peter Nash, who was 32, who was gunned down while guarding his wife from the bullets. Dennis Lever, I don't know how to say it. I'm sorry. I apologize. Who was 53. He was the local jeweler. And he died protecting his loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
And people put all kinds of like flowers and stuff outside of his shop after he passed away.
So sad.
Yeah. Then Ronald Jari, who was 71, and he was a retired fruit grower. And there's interviews on like that YouTube video that I watched, that news vault from his neighbors, just talking about just what an incredible human he was.
God, I hate this.
And then there was Pauline Masters, who was 49. It's so sad.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's like, ugh. But this, and I can't even interject because I can't.
Because you're sad? Because you can't? There's no words?
Yeah, there's no words.
Yeah, it's horrible. So then he moved towards the bus parking lot, like where there were tour buses set up. Because remember, this is a historic site. Situated in front of the cafe building, this parking lot, right? We already discussed because of where he parked his car. And so one of the bus drivers, who was Royce Thompson, was shot in the back as he was moving alongside the passenger side of the bus. He fell to the ground. He was able to crawl under the bus, but he died later. He succumbed to his injuries. And then there was Bridget Cook, who was trying to guide people down between the buses along the jetty area to like get cover. And Martin moved to the front of the bus and he walked across to the next bus, and people quickly moved from this bus from towards the back end of it in an attempt to seek cover. But as he walked around it, he saw people trying to hide, and then he shot them. He shot at them.
Well, I was going to say they're like trapped.
Yeah.
They have nowhere to go.
So Bridget Cook, he was shot in the right thigh, causing the bone to fragment, like his bones. But he survived.
That's good.
Yeah. And then Martin quickly moved around another bus and fired at another group of people. Winifred Alpin, who was running to get cover behind another bus, was fatally shot in the side.
Jeez.
Another woman, a bullet grazed her cheek. Her name was Yvonne Lockley, and she survived. She was able to hide. So then people started, like, to move from the parking lot towards the jetty, trying to, you know, find shelter, get cover. However, someone shouted that the gunman was headed that way, so they doubled back around to the buses.
Oh, fuck.
And then where Bridget Cook had been shot, they were, like, moved back into that area, right? And then, so he then moved to where this couple was, like, taking shelter, Janet and Neville Quinn. Martin shot Janet Quinn in the back where she fell and was unable to move. And she was near Royce Thompson, right? The one who went under the bus. And then he shot Doug Hutchinson, who was attempting to hide in a bus, where he was shot in the arm and survived. Martin then walked to his car. He swapped out his gun. He grabbed his L1A1 self-loading rifle, which was the battle rifle, right? And I think he must have had one of his ARs on him. Yeah, so he swapped out his gun. He then went back to the bus where Janet Quinn was laying down because she was injured, right?
Couldn't move.
He gave her, like, paralysis. He then shot her in the back again. And then he went on to one of the buses, and he fatally shot Elva Gaylord in the arm and the chest. And then he went to the adjacent bus, and then Gordon Francis had seen what had happened, and he, like, shuffled his ass down the aisle trying to shut the door. But then he was seen by Martin and shot from the coach that Martin was still in, from this bus that he was still in. He survived, but he needed, like, a lot of surgeries. He needed 4 surgeries after the fact.
Wow.
So Neville Quinn, who was the husband of Janet, right? He, I'm sorry, this is so many names.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot of people.
A lot of people.
But I'm trying to do my due diligence here. So Neville Quinn, right, who was the husband of Janet, he went to the jetty area, unfortunately, because he had to leave his wife, you know, after she got shot. He's like, I'm sorry, you know, I have to go, you know, try and fucking get out of here, fight or flight.
Yeah. No, yeah. They might have had kids or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or he just wanted to live.
Either way, yeah. I mean, fight or flight. He returned back to the area looking for his wife because, you know, he'd been forced to leave her because she was shot. And then Martin, he came out. He spotted him from around one of the buses. He fired at him at least twice before Neville Quinn ran onto a bus. And then Martin entered the bus. He pointed the gun at his head, at his face. And he looked at him and he said, no one gets away from me. And then Neville Quinn, he ducked and he realized that Martin was about to pull the trigger and the bullet missed his head, but it hit his neck, which momentarily paralyzed him.
Mm-hmm.
So then at this point, Martin got in his car and he started leaving Port Arthur.
Jeez.
People said that they thought that this shooting was like a reenactment of sorts, right? Because Port Arthur, I haven't told you this yet, was a penal colony.
Okay.
So there were cannons around. People were on tours there, right? It was historic. Like, people thought that they were a reenactment. So people are literally headed towards the shooting. People are going to go see what the fuck is up.
Because they think it's like,
they think it's part of it. Yeah. They think it's believing like it's part of their historic tour,
mm-hmm.
or like what's supposed to be happening at Port Arthur.
Oh, that's fucking crazy.
So Ian Kingston, who was a security guard, which this whole area has turned into an open air museum at this point, right? Mm-hmm. And like, there's obviously like the gift shop and the restaurant that we talked about, said that when Martin Bryant began shooting, he dove for safety and shouted for visitors outside to flee the area. The tourists, he said that they just wrote it off as thinking it was part of the historical reenactment until Kingston saved their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Ian Kingston did not try to go back into the cafe. He said, "You don't get a second chance with a gun like that."
Nope.
And then he also said, this is really sad. This is him speaking of everything after the fact, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He also said, "Should I have waited until he came out? Should I have tried to tackle him? Did I do the right thing? Would I have saved more lives if I tried to tackle him rather than have people get away from the front of the cafe?" So that's really sad.
It is sad. Because survivor guilt.
Yeah, survivor guilt for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's recap again the victims of the outside of shooting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there was... Oh, and his death toll's at 24 now.
Okay.
So there was, Janet Quinn, who was 50, and she and her husband owned a wildlife park on the east coast of Tasmania.
Okay.
Elva Gaylord, who was 48, Winifred Alpin, who was 58, and Royce Thomas, who was 59.
That sucks.
Yeah. It's really sad.
It's really sad.
Oh, this next one is just horrible.
Oh, okay.
This is all horrible.
I'm like,
this
that was
one,
horrible.
This one, like, I was able to find a lot.
Okay.
So when he was leaving Port Arthur and driving towards the exit, ahead of him were Nanette Mikak, I think is how you say their name.
Okay.
And her children, Madeline, who was 3, and Alana, who was 6. Nanette was carrying Madeline and Alana was like slightly ahead. I think it's Alana.
Okay.
Because it's spelled like Hannah, okay. But with an A-L.
Gotcha.
Alana. We're going to go with that.
Okay.
Who was running slightly ahead. So by this point, they were about a third of a mile from the parking lot, like approaching the toll booth that they have to go through when they enter,
mm-hmm.
to go into the Port Arthur historic area.
Mm-hmm.
Martin had opened his door and slowed down. Nanette and her children obviously, you know, thought he was there offering help, like that he was somebody who escaped. He stepped out of the car and he told Nanette to get on her knees, and she did. And then he shot her.
Ugh.
And she was also holding her daughter, who he also shot then, her 3-year-old daughter.
Jeez.
And Alana, she attempted to flee,
mm-hmm.
but he caught up to her and he shot her.
God, what a fucking asshole.
Yeah, this guy sucks.
Yeah, he's horrible.
Okay, so Walter Mikak, I don't know how you say their last name. I'm sorry. There was no like part about this in like a video or anything. Alana and Madeline's dad,
mm-hmm.
and Nanette's husband.
Mm-hmm.
He started the Alana and Madeline, mm-hmm. Foundation in 1997 with Dr. Phil West, Gay and John Fiddler. Those, the two of them that were in the Fiddlers should sound somewhat familiar because, mm-hmm. they were in the cafe, and some others who were impacted by this horrible day. And this is directly from the website. This is directly from them.
Okay.
This is their like about me page. It said, 25 years ago, Walter Mikak AM and a small group of volunteers established a foundation on the behalf that, quote, all children should have a safe and happy childhood without being subjected to any form of violence. What is remarkable is that they did this in honor of Walter's daughters, Alana and Madeline, who were killed alongside their mother in an unspeakable act of violence 1 year earlier. From this tragedy, vision. From tragedy, hope. From tragedy, strength. Today, we in turn honor Walter Micak AM and the impact of the Alana and Madeline Foundation has made. This form of violence and its effects may have changed, but our founding belief has not. We uphold the rights of children and young people to be safe. The right to be safe at home, at school, at play. The right to be seen and heard and valued. The right to go online without abuse. The right to go to sleep without fear. The right to heal, the right to grow, and sometimes the right to unconditional love of a teddy bear when needed most. Now, through Dolly's dream, for their right to be safe from bullying online, at school, and beyond. We fight for these rights, not just because children are precious, they are, and not just because our instinct is to protect them from the world, it is, but because only when young people are safe, they can also be happy, hopeful, and strong. Only when they're safe, it is their best future possible. That's why we're here. That's why we do what we do. It's their right. It's our reason. I know you're crying.
I'm tearing up.
And then this is the impact that...
Because it's so fucking sad.
This is the impact of the foundation. So as of when we're recording this, these are always like live updated, I've noticed, through the website. But as of when we're recording this, they've helped 29,313 children. They've benefited from support for dealing with trauma. 1,876 children have had a safe and supportive space in their cubby house. And the cubby house is a safe haven for children and young people at the Melbourne and Broadmeadows Children's Courts. They've educated 2,580 children and young people through their digital schools. They have delivered 114,000 buddy bags to children and young people at time of crisis. And buddy bags, it says they provide essential material for a child who may have nothing but the clothes they are wearing. I know. We're going to have to pause this and cry.
No. We need to finish. Because, geez.
Yeah, it's horrible. This one's like really fucking bad.
Yeah.
They're all just bad.
It's bad.
So Martin then drove up to the toll booth at the exit of the historical site where there were several vehicles. However, he decided to block a 1980 gold BMW 7 Series owned by Mary Rose Nixon. And inside was Mary Rose Nixon, the driver, who was Russell James Pollard, and passengers Helen and Graham Salzman. An argument with Robert Salzman ensued, and Martin took out his rifle and he shot him.
Jeez.
Russell Pollard emerged from the BMW and moved towards Martin before also being shot. Martin then moved to the BMW and fatally shot Mary Rose Nixon and Helen Salzman before removing them from the car. He then moved all of his ammunition, his handcuffs, his rifle, and the fuel container to the BMW before he drove off in it and just left his Volvo behind. So when he stole this car, he killed the four passengers, who were Mary Rose Nixon, who was 60, Russell James Pollard, who was 72, Helen Salzman, who was 50, and Robert Salzman, who was 57.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So 28. Okay.
So then...
No more than that, right? Because we're at 24, and then he got those three...
The
two kids and the mom.
Oh, yeah.
So that's 27, and so then there's four more. So we're at 31.
We're at 31, yes.
Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah.
One is too many.
Yeah.
Especially for no reason, other than you're a scarred human being, obviously.
One is too many in any case.
Yeah.
Martin drove up to the service station in front of the Port Arthur General Store, where he cut off a white Toyota Corolla that was attempting to exit onto the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Pears was the driver. He was with his girlfriend, Zoe Hall, who was in the passenger seat. He quickly exited the car with his rifle, and he tried to pull Zoe from the car, and then Glenn got out of the car and approached Martin, and then Martin pointed the gun at Glenn. He then pushed him backwards, and then he opened the trunk of the BMW, demanded him get inside of it, and so this is the first time he's taking a hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And then he moved back to the passenger of the Corolla, who was Zoe Hall.
Mm-hmm.
She attempted to climb over the driver's seat and get out, but then he fired three shots and killed her.
Jeez.
So when he pulled over this car, he only killed Zoe, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm recapping as I'm going. I'm sorry. Okay, so as he pulled over, he only killed Zoe this time. Mm-hmm. He took Glenn Pears as a hostage. So Zoe Hall, she was 28 years old. She was a Sydney solicitor. She was in Tasmania for her friend's birthday And people said that she just lived for everything, that she was just full of life.
That sucks.
Yeah. So now at this point, Martin was headed back to Seascape, right? Bed and breakfast. And as Martin drove down to Seascape, he shot at a red Ford Falcon, which was coming the other way. He smashed it, or he like got the windshield, right? And then when he got to Seascape, he got out of the car. And then there was a Holden Frontera four-wheel drive vehicle that drove up along the road. And he's in the vehicle. They saw Martin with his gun, but thought he was rabbit hunting.
Oh, geez.
So they slowed down as they passed him. Then he fired into the car. The first bullet hit the bonnet and broke the throttle cable. And then he fired at least two more times as the car passed, breaking all the windows of the car.
Jeez.
And one bullet hit the driver, Linda White, in the arm. And then another vehicle drove down the road, which had four people in it. It was not until like they were almost like adjacent to Bryant that they could see that he had a gun. And then he shot in the car, smashed the windshield. Douglas Horner was wounded by pieces of like the windshield. And then the car proceeded ahead where White and Wanders, the people who were in the other car, tried to get in. But Douglas Horner didn't realize the situation, and he drove on. And then when they saw that Linda White had been shot, they came back and they picked them up. And then they both, like everyone, continued down in this one car to the Fox and the Hound Inn, where they then called the police.
Okay.
Yeah, another car drove past. And he hit the passenger, who was Susan Williams, in the hand. And then the driver, who was Simon Williams, he was struck by fragments of the bullets. And then at some time, like sometime after this, he arrived to Seascape right around like 2 p.m. He removed Glenn Pears from the trunk. He handcuffed him to the stairs inside by the Martins' bodies within the Seascape cottage.
Jeez.
And then at some point, he set the BMW on fire.
Wow.
And then two officers who were responding to the Seascape roadway shootings, who were Paul Hyland and Gary Whittle, they had arrived, right?
I can't believe they only sent two cops.
Well, they didn't know what was going on.
Well, okay.
But you would think that they would know from, right? And yeah, from... Yeah. What's happening at Port Arthur. But anyway, when they got there, Martin was firing at them. So they like took shelter in a ditch. And every time like they tried to like pop their heads up or move their position, he would fire again. So he was like essentially just trapping them where they were.
Right.
And so we're going to leave this here. We're going to end here because part three is going to be insane.
Oh, okay.
Not that this wasn't insane, but just everything. I want to spend time. I don't want to feel we're already at an hour and I don't want to feel rushed talking about what's going to continue to unfold.
Okay.
So let me just remind you that there's at this point, he's killed 34 people in the space of about 22 minutes. And that's over the course of 2 hours.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
I thought I was picking one that was insane, but I picked one that's insane in the membrane.
Yeah, that's fucking crazy. And are you sure you're right with your body count? Because you have the Martins.
Yeah, that's 34.
Okay.
Well, he kills 35 people in total. I guess I could just reveal it right now that he's gonna kill Glenn Pears. But yeah. As of now, Glenn Pears is alive or we're leaving this off.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. This is the deadliest mass shooting in Australian history. And this is, I want to spend time talking about the impact of this case. And this is what led to all the reform in Australia and how insane it was, and talk about like him and his sentencing and just how the impact. So that's what I want to spend part three talking about. And obviously how he got caught. Oh my God, that is insane.
Okay.
So that will be part three.
Okay. Well, I hope it doesn't wind up like mine where it should have been four parts and then the last part was 2 hours.
It won't be.
Okay. Well, not that I'm criticizing. I criticize myself.
If it is, then I'm going to put it as four parts.
Yeah. Because.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
It's a lot. Well, I would say thank you, but I'm not meaning it. And I think. Yeah.
I know this one's really hard. This one's really sad. I mean, they're all sad in their own right, right? Mm-hmm. They all are horrible.
Yeah, but terrible.
I feel like the first part was like kind of goofy. And then here we are.
Yeah, the first part I can make some light, but there's no light.
Yeah, there's no light except for the foundation.
Well, yeah, but
except for what the victims and the survivors have done to be better and, you know, mm-hmm. have an impact.
Yeah.
Their impact.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah. The only good that's come of it for sure.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, thanks.
Yeah. You can go follow us on Instagram at That's Disturbing Podcast. Send us a DM of what you want us to research and record. And sorry if it takes us 5 years to do it, because this has been a lot. And you can send us a Gmail. That's disturbingpodcast@gmail.com. And that's all I got. I'm sorry that this is going to be so long. And I'm sorry if I just sent you into stage 5 depression, because same.
Yeah, it's really bad.
All right. Well, that's all I got. Bye-bye.